This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Childish Gambino, yeah, I got that swagger. Yeah, hater mad, but it just don't matter. These girls all know that I got that cheddar. Put it on a sandwich and eat it up a platter. My mouth vacationing, chilling on a lawn. It's amazing how I'm off, but I'm on. Lame niggas try to make a move like pawn.
Howdy, you are here with Ben. This is the Row 1, Seat 1 podcast. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate your support the last few weeks. We got a big show this week. We got Tommy. Tommy's going to talk about his experience at 10 WrestleManias and his adventures with the good brother Mike, the good brother Frey. God, he's got some stories. And then afterwards, we have Mr. Gator. He's going to talk about starting a promotion. Primetime Pro Wrestling is going to be starting in the Washington, D.C. area. We got an interview later on with him. But brother Tommy, welcome to the show. We appreciate having you on. You were one of the first guests I wanted to have on because, my friend, you have some stories that I wanted you to share, both about your adventures with Brother Frey and just some of the stuff you've seen. Tommy, you've seen some shit.
Seen some shit. Been to a lot of shitty places. Seen a lot of shitty wrestling. Seen a lot of good wrestling. Yeah, I've hit the road for quite a number of years.
And most of those are with good brother Michael, good brother Frey. I'm just going to make this official stance of this podcast. If you're not down with good brother Mike, if you're not down with good brother Frey, fuck you as a record label staff and as a motherfucking crew. And if you're not down with Mike, fuck you too.
Yeah. Mike's good. Mike's cool.
He's
a good guy.
He's our friend. If you know him in person like we do, he's actually a good human being. And he's not literally anything that anyone says about him.
Listen. I have known this guy literally since I was 18 years old. He's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine.
This kind of dovetails into your wrestling
I sure hope you can hear my fucking dog, by the way.
You have a lovely dog. This kind of dovetails into your wrestling de-virginization. Talk about your budding friendship with Mike and how this kind of led into you making towns.
Well, I mean, we met in college and...
Bible school, you know, correct?
Bible college. That's correct. How could I leave that out? Bible college. So, of course, being the handsome bachelors we were, we found the first wrestling fan we could and just latched on tight. But that's basically how that was. I mean, not a whole lot of wrestling fans in school. So I'd seen on the campus website or the school website beforehand, he was involved in some type of organization and said that he was a wrestling fan. So I emailed him and, we hooked up after that in school and started going to shows after that. He was involved with radio down there in the campus radio station, so we had done a little bit with that. He did a lot with that. I did a little bit with him with that, and then we just started kind of hitting the road, going to local shows, traveling for WWE and so on and so forth, really.
Now, was WWE always your first love? Because you're originally from the St. Louis area, correct? You always grew up in St.
Right.
Louis?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my whole life. I grew up a WWF fan when I was like really little. Like I was a Hulkamaniac, but I don't have a lot of memories of it. But I'll watch things from time to time and it just like kind of rings some bells. So I know that there was a period of time in my young life when I was watching, early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, I would say probably around 1990, maybe that's when I know for sure. Around then, but I fell out of it for years and years until about 1997, and I started watching WCW with my brother.
Sure.
So I was a WCW. I was a hardcore WCW fan, of course, until the end and everything. But once me and, you know, Mike started hanging out, it was WWE was like big, but we were both, you know, in a TNA at the time, because that was, you know, around 04, 05, so that was when they were starting to expand.
You were original TNA fans. You were original TNA fans.
Oh God, yeah. We went to Bound for Glory 2006, the first pay per view outside of the Impact Zone.
Where was that?
That was in Pontiac, Michigan.
Oh my God.
Yep. We drove, I think it was something like 14 hours to get there. The irony of the whole situation, the Cardinals were in the World Series against the Tigers that weekend. So we drive in, we get tickets to the Fan Fest. We literally are like sitting in the lobby of the Fan Fest at like 7 in the morning. You know, like before that maybe. And the doors don't even open for like hours, but we're in line and we're just there and we're just tired. And I have to this day in my parents' house, I have poster board, just a white poster board with autographs of just about everybody from the TNA roster. AJ Styles.
They were loaded.
Christopher
too,
Daniels.
Yeah.
Dude, Kurt Angle. Who else? Abyss, R-Truth, Raven, everybody. I mean, I've got that poster board. Like, just we got everybody. Just
That's
about.
Awesome.
I don't think I got Kevin Nash. There's a few of them that he, Kevin Nash, you know, a few others. But yeah, that was a crazy weekend. Now
accessible. Were they really
accessible
to TNA?
At the time, absolutely. Like, Dixie Carter's walking around. Mike talked to Dixie Carter. We were talking to Mike Tenay, just hanging out. You know, this is, mind you, this is the first time they're out of the Impact Zone.
Sure.
You know, they're, you know, they've been to Huntsville, Nashville, and then Orlando. But this is the first time they've gone on the road.
And they see you guys who camped out, essentially.
Well, I mean, there was a long line of us. There was some lady who claimed to be Paul Heyman's niece who was dressed like him, which was really creepy, which she ended up sitting next to us front row at Bound for Glory.
Oh, my God.
And I scooted right past Mike so that I didn't have to sit by her, and he was very upset with me. the good brother Jacob Cohen in the same row.
Oh, didn't love
know
Jacob.
Him, but... Yeah, he was in the same exact row. Did not know that. The good brother, Shy WrestleNut, Andrew.
Yeah,
I believe, and maybe I'm getting this mixed up. I believe he was supposed to be there, and then ended up not being able to make the show.
So, was this the first long trip you guys made?
You know, I'm trying to think. We went to, let's see, as far as long trips, I think it might have been, I can't remember one that was before that was a long trip, but we went, the furthest we usually went was about 45 minutes down the road. There was a local wrestling, like Southern Indie, called Chaotic Championship Wrestling. They ran in Selmer, Tennessee, out of the JC's building, which was phenomenal.
Amazing.
We cheered for all of the bad guys, and the crowd, of course, cheered for all of the good guys and hated us.
I would hate you. Come bringing my daughter, I would hate you. I have a guy at my local indie who does that.
Oh,
and
I know.
He's the most annoying human being on the planet, and
yeah.
I'm there with my daughter, and I want to strangle him.
I know. Now I look back, and I'm like, I don't know. I look back now and I'm like, okay, we were just, you know, we were late teens, early 20s, and just, you know, smarky kind of, you know, people at the time and just having fun with it all. Now, here's what's funny about those shows. Jerry Lawler was always there because, of course, it's Tennessee on a Friday night.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Here's the lineup, basically. Iceman King Parsons.
Oh, shit.
No, I'm not Iceman King Parsons. My bad. Brickhouse Brown.
Even better.
Brickhouse Brown. Dangerous Doug Gilbert. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, you might have like a Brian Lawler come through or something like that. Phantasmo, I saw him in the surrounding area there. Dutch Mantel was a booker and a commentator for them down there. I assume booker, but he was commentator. What a gem. Yeah. This is all while he was working for TNA.
What a gem. And then you have a note here that says the world's worst national anthem.
Okay, so they would always, of course, play the national anthem there down there at the JC's building. Because, you know, this is America and this is serious fucking business. You know, troops died for this.
You know, R.I.P. and peace.
I digress. I digress. So they, of course, have their recording of the national anthem that starts to play and everything. And as on cue with a shitty Southern indie, it goes out. And some young lady in the crowd decides to take it upon herself to finish what is left of the national anthem. But the problem is, she can't hit the high notes. So every time she gets there, she just goes, "Woo!" and keeps singing. And of course, everybody gives her a standing ovation. God bless America.
God bless America.
Now, speaking of Jerry Lawler, speaking of Jerry Lawler, Brother Michael was supposed to interview him for the campus radio station, but he either forgot to hit record or lost all the audio or something of that nature. Didn't end up being able to record the whole interview.
What a lost opportunity.
Lost the whole fucking thing.
Lost opportunity right there.
Yep.
Imagine what Jerry Lawler might have said there.
Right. I mean, you know, he was there with his probably teenage girlfriend, so any number of things.
Now, because you guys are known for being the Mania Road Warriors. When did you start hitting Manias? You've hit 10.
10. So the first one that either of us went to was 07. I didn't go to that one. I should have gone to that one. I was supposed to go to that one. I backed out because I had prior commitments, which I look back now, they were dumb college things that I had to do, but I didn't have to do, and I should have just gone regardless. That was his first one. That was Detroit, 23. And I got really jealous. Well, the next year was my last year in college. It was also one of my best friends. It was his it was kind of his bachelor party for me, him and his brother. So we decided to go watch Ric Flair retire because he was our favorite wrestler. So let's do it.
Yeah.
Yep. So me and those two guys, I left from college. I did my senior thesis on I had to debate one of my Bible professors on the on why baptism is essential to salvation. I skipped my next class, went to Alabama, picked up my friends. We continued on to Orlando, 14 hours or whatever the hell it was. We got there at like 4 or 5 in the morning. My mom was amazing, got us this amazing hotel on iDrive at the Sheraton, which was fucking incredible.
Unbelievable.
We ended up waking up like 4 hours later and getting in the pool and met some little Irish punk who kept insulting us, and that was fun. And we're like, fuck off. Like, get the hell out of here. Oh, I pulled my pants down on my bedroom or my hotel room floor way up towards the top of this hotel on iDrive and just showed my bare ass. So that was fun.
This is going to become a trend?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. Yeah. No, but that was my first one, Orlando, you know, with those guys. But my first one with Michael was 25 in Houston, which was like a last minute plan. Like we had no intentions of going. And then last minute, he literally drove in that morning. I flew in that morning. He picked me up from the airport. We drove to the airport to access to the venue. We went to the show. We left. I can't even remember. I don't think we even got anything to eat or anything like that. I think he just dropped me off at the airport, and he went home.
And now you're doing crazy indie shows and doing all sorts of crazy shit, and seeing Sandman's hernia, which we'll talk about later.
My God.
My God. So you've done 10 of these.
10.
What are the more memorable Mania stories that you have sticking out? Sandman's hernia, obviously.
Oh, God. When Sandman pulled his pants down in front of me and showed me his hernia about 3 inches away from my face. Yeah, that was interesting. And at Denny's at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, what the hell? And he starts talking about the CERN over in Switzerland, how they're trying to make a star and they're going to blow us all up, pull us into a black hole. Or how about the fact that he was on center court whenever the Sixers won the NBA Finals back in the 80s or whatever the hell it was. And, you know, he was a Chippendale dancer.
This is the shit I want to hear.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah, here's what's funny. I'm going to give you an exclusive right here on this podcast.
Go ahead.
Is I have about 9 minutes or so recorded of Hack just sitting there talking in the Denny's. And I have told people ever since that I lost that recording. Bullshit. Don't believe anything I ever say.
Is it on your current phone?
I believe so, yeah.
We're playing that SCI, brother.
We'll see. We'll see.
No, we'll see about it. No, we'll you've now put it on a public podcast.
We'll see.
My God.
We'll see.
What is the Winking Lizard?
The Winking Lizard is a fine establishment in Cleveland, Ohio. By the way, fuck Cleveland, Ohio. Don't ever go. There's a shithole. But it is where Brother Michael and I dined before Unforgiven 2008, I believe it is what it was. Is that the pay-per-view with the scramble match? The World Championship scramble match?
I have the shittiest memory on the planet. I rely on my guess.
I always get the name of it wrong. I used to say No Mercy, so I'm thinking it's Unforgiven. But anyway, yeah, that Cleveland pay-per-view with the scramble match back in 08, mm-hmm. where we made foolish decisions. So my last semester in college was the fall of 2008, and I decided that I wanted to do a wrestling death tour. So I was going to go to as many wrestling shows as I possibly could that semester, and wrote down a list of shows throughout the semester: WWE house shows, live events, Ring of Honor, TNA if I was able to. I didn't get to all of what I wanted to do. Like, Toronto was on there. I didn't get to go to Toronto, but I put Cleveland down on there, and I told Michael all about this. He was long gone out of college. He had graduated about a year and a half before. So I told him about this, and, of course, you know, he was always down for doing stupid shit when it came to wrestling. So my girlfriend at the time was living off campus in an apartment about half an hour away from school. And this is a Saturday night before the show, and I'm hanging out with her, just hanging out, doing my thing, and I get this call from Michael. And he starts just kind of laughing, and I'm like, what's going on? And he goes, you want to go to Cleveland? And I'm like, God damn it. I'm like, yeah, let me go pack a bag. So he drives up on no sleep. I think he's had an hour of sleep, I believe, or something of that nature at that point. Actually, at that point, I don't believe he slept at all. He's been up all day. So he drives from Tupelo up to Jackson, Tennessee, where I'm at. I get about 2 or 3 hours of sleep at my girlfriend's house, and then he comes and picks me up. We go to Walmart. We get whatever we need. We hit the road. We drive all goddamn night to this stupid pay-per-view. We're tired. We have no energy. The Browns are playing the Cowboys, which I'm told that things get pretty rough whenever the Browns lose. So, of course, I was like, well, I expect them to lose.
This is before Michael was a Browns fan, by the way.
Of course.
Lifetime Browns fan since 2018.
Indeed. And there was a gentleman on the street who called him Big Man and tried to get his attention. And we, of course, ignored him and kept walking. And he had some choice words for quote-unquote Big Man that were not too friendly. But I digress. We went to the show. We get back in the car. We keep driving. So I'm guessing probably in the car. So I had about 2 hours of sleep. when I was at my girlfriend's house. I got about another hour of sleep driving to Cleveland. He got about 2 hours of sleep. So we're on a combined 5 hours of sleep driving home.
Seems bad.
It seems bad. I do remember, and there was a bit of nacho cheese on the steering wheel when I was driving. I started kind of dozing, and I was like, hey, man, I can't drive. I got to switch. So we switch. And, you know, a little while later, we switched back, and I said, hey, Michael, there was a cheese spot on this steering wheel, and he just replies, I got hungry. You know what? We were up for two goddamn days on no sleep. I'm not mad at
him. I don't begrudge him. I don't begrudge him at all.
No, no. And you know what? I think this may be the same trip where we were driving back, where we decided to keep filling up like bags, like fast food bags, in the back of seat of the car. I mean, his car was just loaded with bags of fast food, and we were so slap happy that we were loading them up, and we were just tossing them out the window on the highway, and just watching them explode, and it was just so much fun. Like, I would never do that now. I'm a lot more intelligent now. But, well, man, at the time, it was just so much fun.
So what is the Winking Lizard?
The Winking Lizard is the place where we ate at in Cleveland.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. As one does.
Which, when we saw that, we were like, well, of course that's where we're going to eat. Why would we not? It must not have been too bad or good, because I don't remember anything about it, really.
You have Teddy Hart listed on your list here. Everyone seems to have a Teddy Hart story. What is your Teddy Hart story?
Yeah, Teddy Hart stories in Phoenix for Dragon Gate USA were there was these big pits around the ring, this whatever weird establishment this was at. So We paid practically nothing for our tickets, and then of course we were told that we could move down closer for absolutely no charge, because there was nobody there. And then Teddy Hart, of course, was wrestling, and we encouraged him to do a moonsault out of the ring into one of these pits, and of course he did, and broke his leg. Oh, I mean, what the hell is he listening to us?
That's Teddy Hart.
I'm not a wrestler.
Teddy Hart is the most Teddy Hart wrestler who's ever lived.
God bless you, Teddy Hart.
God bless you, Teddy Hart. God, if Teddy Hart wasn't around, we'd have to invent him. Well, I want to close, too, a little bit with talk a little bit about, you are in St. Louis now. Talk about the St. Louis scene and what's going on there, because you are kind of the underground hero of the St. Louis scene right now. And there's a lot of really good stuff happening there right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of cool things happening. You know, us in St. Louis Anarchy, of course. You know, PWCS is doing cool things. Glory Pro's got their own thing going on and everything. And you know, the scene's good and it's healthy, and that's good for everybody. But we got a show coming up, Hog Wild, on the 24th. Is it 26th, 24th? I can't remember. 24th. Yeah, 24th. I should know that. Anyway, yeah, a lot of cool stuff happening with that, and that's what's going on there.
Awesome, awesome. Well, dude, these are some really cool stories. Do you want to plug your Twitter?
Sure, BerserkerT_T on Twitter. I don't care if you follow me or not. I'm probably not going to follow you back, because I don't give a fuck. But follow Anarchy on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter at STL Anarchy. Watch us on IWTV, or Independent Wrestling TV, formerly Powerbomb, because everybody still calls it that. Ladies Night's still up.
Ladies Night is
Did you watch Kylie Rae and Gary J? Did you watch it?
I haven't watched it yet, no. I gotta sit down and get some time to.
Damn it. Come on, Ben.
I need to get some time to, I know.
Now, here's a question. I've been doubting a lot. Did you watch Gary J and Nick Gage?
I did watch that, yes. That was fantastic.
That was some shit. That was some shit.
That was on recommendation from my friend Tommy. There you go. Watch it, and that was
Well, let me tell you, I didn't think that Gary J and Kylie Rae could hold up to that, and it's almost as good, if not as good.
Dear Lord, that's the highest recommendation.
Dude, I'm telling you, the building was electric.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I just,
you gotta get up there.
I have a list of like 10 shows I need to see. I know, I need to. That's St. Louis place, is on my man. Summer list. It's definitely it's on there.
Oh, if you're gonna come, July is the time to come. Circus Maximus.
What's the date? July.
July 19th.
Well, the only issue is that Game Changer Wrestling just announced for Nashville 2 days later.
So make it a weekend. You come to St. Louis, then you drive back through Nashville.
That's a possibility. Distinct possibility.
I mean, let me tell you, Work Horsemen and the Besties, Gary J versus Jigsaw.
God, that could be a weekend.
I'm putting my money.
That could be a weekend.
I'm biased, but I'm putting my money on it.
Could be a lot of road tripping that weekend.
That's the best weekend. Sorry.
That could be the best weekend ever. Could imagine St. Louis and then Tullahoma, Tennessee. And then...
Tullahoma.
And then Nashville. And then SCI 2 weeks later. My God. You're coming to SCI, right?
Pretty sure I've been to shows in Tullahoma. Of course I am. I just put my days in for today.
Beautiful. Glad to hear it. All right, brother. I love you. You're a wonderful man. Can't wait to see you.
I love you, too. Same.
And I will see you soon, my friend.
I'll see you soon. Love you, brother.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
We had a busy week over on the Pop Beat with a little something for everyone. Ben Morse and Russell Sellers close out 1970 on a new Marvel Age Masterclass. Jennifer Smith welcomes in Todd Weber to watch Yoga Hosers in this month's Freakout Drive-In. JT's Rosero, Peter Winston, and Don Carrara paid tribute to the wonderful Veep as it wind downs its run. They even got a shout-out from Julie Louis Dreyfus for this PTPN Pop Special podcast. Andy Atherton and Russell Sellers gave a look at Forgetting Sarah Marshall in this episode of Laugh-In Theater. The hard-traveling fanboys head off the page with a review of Marvel Ultimate Alliance. And speaking of Nick and Greg, coming up at the end of May, the hard-traveling fanboys will be wrapping up their Hard Travelers for Hire series with a special giant-sized edition of the podcast. Greg and Nick will be joined by past guests for a retrospective look back at the highs and lows of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And they want your opinions. After you've seen Endgame, send in your full rankings of the MCU movies from 1 to 22 to Nick D at PlaceToBeNation.com. The full composite rankings for PlaceToBeNation will be revealed on the show, so get your ballots in to make your voice heard. Ballots are due May 16th. Over on the PlaceToBeNation feed, wrestling feed, Scott, JT, and John D'Amato gave a supersized deep dive in WrestleMania 5 on episode 519 of the PlaceToBe podcast. In the third episode of Row 1, Seat 1, I chatted with up-and-comer O'Shea Edwards and break down the Making Town Classic at the WrestleMania Weekend Blackcraft Wrestling Show while I was drunk. In the new Making Towns of Friends, Steve welcoming Kelly Jean to talk about her first live wrestling experience. We continue to dive in the vault to bring in classic episodes where the big boys play. In this installment, Parv, Chad, and Solomon finish their look at Starrcade 87. Check out our social media pages and message board at Bigelow34.proboards.com for information on the GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your list.
I do not talk. I am just a rapper.
Motherfucker nigga, hell yeah, I do it bigger. I got 8 figures like I'm skating, and the winner niggas thought that I was kidding. These raps are not my sketches. I'm a sick boy nigga. When I cough, I hope you catch it. My germs in your system, now you coughing like asthmatic. All of my, I'm tired of it, turns into your wish I had it. I don't need this money, but I spend it like I wanna. She said this dick is hers, I don't wanna take it from her. Your dick stay chilling, it's a cold, rough world. I get superhero pussy, she a Powerpuff Girl. Shit just got real like Pinocchio Turks, and your nigga is Geppetto. I don't want no instrumentals, leave the vocals on my shit, like that song giving me head. And your bitch can't sleep, cause she used to my bed. She can have any dick, you just mad she chose in mine. Schooling all you niggas, and my mouth will make it Columbine. I am just a rapper, man, I ain't got no clothing line. My clothing line is clothing line, and let me shop at Clothing Time. Your boy got stacks, like I'm standing in a Borders line, hiding from you bitches, cause real niggas hard to find. Work this shit like overtime, yeah, my clothes are soul design. Closet look like Bloomingdale's, your closet look like Fast and Jail. I break you out, I post the bail. This money make me owe since when you call your bitch, you hearing this. Yes, it's necessary to be flyer than Canary. Stay fresh to death like a mint cemetery. I do not talk, yeah, my life a library. Eat her out and leave her cold, make that home my Ben and Jerry's. Broke the mold, all you bitches, man, I am so unique.
We are here live on Row 1, Seat 1 with Gator. Gator is starting a new promotion. Tell us a little bit about it.
It is Primetime Pro Wrestling. It will be the first independent pro wrestling company in the District of Columbia, possibly ever.
Ever.
There have been ever, or at least for years and years. There have been plans in the past. Things have unfortunately fallen through. It has been quite a journey getting here. And on May 26th, we are really going to make history. I know as wrestling fans and as people in the wrestling world, we love our hyperbole, but we are literally making history on May 26th.
And you are a friend. You are experienced in the wrestling business and one of the most well-traveled and in-depth fans that I could possibly know. So I wanted to have you on because you're not just some greenhorn getting into the business here, both as a fan and as someone in the wrestling business. You're someone who knows this stuff, and we're going to get into that a little bit here, and someone who's really earned this. You're going in with some knowledge, and you're not going in blind with both feet. You're actually going in, knowing what you're doing here a little bit here. So, you're going to have a modicum of success, if not a great amount of success. I'm fully confident of that. But tell me a little bit about, you sent me your list of what you've been to, and my God, by my count, what you're telling me here, 8 Royal Rumbles, 8 WrestleManias, 3 Survivor Series, 3 SummerSlams. Did you win the lottery? Is that how you go to all this stuff?
No, I have been fortunate. A lot of those have been local to me. So my first pay-per-view ever was the 91 Royal Rumble, which was in Miami, and I grew up in South Florida. Mm-hmm. And then when WrestleMania went to Orlando, I went to Orlando. And then when WrestleMania went to Miami, we were 29.
Well, I was there. It was great.
Yeah. I'm from South Florida, and I was doing a podcast at the time. And the guys who I did the podcast with, we all had Florida family. And Edge went into the Hall of Fame, and we had a friend who's a big Edge fan. So we decided to go for it, make a trip of it, and do it. And so that was the first of the last 8 or however many in a row now. And then the following year was in New York, and my buddy wanted to go to New York. So it was the same core group, and then New Orleans, and so on and so forth. So it's been my good friend, Little Santiago, who I've talked about in my promos in the past, and I have been the two constants. We actually were both in Orlando at WrestleMania 24, but we didn't know each other at the time. And then once you start going to shows and you have somebody who wants to go, then you can start planning trips around it. And so Little Santiago and I have been to all of those WrestleManias and all of those Rumbles together. The Survivor Series, is the first one was in DC. There was one in Boston, and he lives up in Boston, so, and I'm in DC, so it's a short flight up to Boston. So it's just been luck and geographic benefit and some connections I have in the ticketing and travel world that have opened up those opportunities to me. I'm very fortunate. I know some fans would love to have those kinds of opportunities to go to as many shows and have as many experiences as I've had. And I count all of my blessings that I've had those kinds of opportunities.
No, I give shit, but you're in the Northeast. That helps a lot, you know, because you're close to everything. But I say that to say you are a dedicated and have long been. Your first Rumble was what you said. You told me 91.
Yes, I was a spry 9-year-old.
So you've been a longtime fan, and you have been a dedicated fan for going on more than 3 decades now. What made you fall in love with wrestling? I like to ask that question.
Yeah, absolutely. I can remember very well being a kid, and I was obsessed with the Rocky movies. So I would watch I would watch all the Rocky movies, especially like 2, 3, and 4. That was like my wheelhouse. Not as much the first one, because as a kid, it's a drama. It's a different, you know, when you get older and you see it and you see all the great stuff, that's one thing. But as a kid and you're more into, you know, Mr. T and Ivan Drago. Oh,
totally. No, Rocky IV ended the Cold War, in my opinion.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah. It absolutely did. So at that point, my parents were so aggravated that they decided that I was banned from watching any Rocky movies. And then I started watching wrestling. And I can remember, I knew Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was everywhere.
Well, he was Thunderlips.
Yeah, he was Thunderlips. He was in the movie. And I remember when they had all the stuff out for No Holds Barred. And you know, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And they had the cartoon and everything. But specifically, I can remember the feud, and I've talked about this on my podcast in the past, that the feud that really got me into being a wrestling fan, and it wouldn't have been seeing this pay-per-view, but it would have been seeing the coverage of this after the pay-per-view, is when Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat had their third match of 1989, and then Terry Funk was one of the judges, and Terry Funk wanted a shot, and Flair said no, and Terry Funk attacked him, put him through the table and all that. And I can remember seeing, 605 on TBS, them recapping it and doing the whole angle. Is Flair going to retire? Does he have to retire? Flair is on a neck brace. And I can remember shopping with my mother and grandmother and insisting that we have to go home by this time so we can see the announcement about what the future for Ric Flair is going to be. And then from that point forward, everything is kind of gone from there.
That's a hell of a place to start, too. I mean, that's you. That's the greatest year of wrestling, in my opinion. It was 89 Crockett WCW, and that's a hell of a place to start.
Yeah, and it was that time, that year, that really solidified everything, and it was Crockett, NWA, WCW, 89-90 with Sting, who still remains my all-time favorite, Lex Luger, the Horseman, and everybody you can imagine, the Great Muta. It was just a really fantastic time, 89, 90, 91, and then, some things happened with Flair leaving, and I think they kind of screwed up on Sting's booking, but, who am I to say? But, yeah, those were really magical times, especially in the Mid-Atlantic Crockett, NWA, WCW world.
So not to fast forward many, many, many years, but the main reason I wanted to have you on the podcast is because you're going to all these wrestling shows. You're becoming a fan. It seems like you're a fan all the way throughout. You get involved with another organization. How do you get involved in the business, basically? Because you got involved a few years back, correct? What makes you kind of cross the line?
I had been doing I had done a wrestling podcast for years, and then I had done a second wrestling podcast. And I had even before doing these podcasts, I had a weekly radio show that was not wrestling specific or sports specific, but it started when I had my own personal website, and I used to joke that there would be an adults only, members only section called Fat Man After Dark. And that became my radio show, was Fat Man After Dark.
Oh, cool.
And after doing that for a little bit, then I started doing I met some people who I did my podcast with, a guy named Don Mega, who put together what was called the Future Endeavors Wrestling Podcast. Originally, there were four of us. The fourth guy, Maurice, is like the lost brother from Happy Days. He just kind of disappeared. And then it was the three of us, my friend Little Santiago, who I'm still very close with, and Don, and I did this podcast. And then we ended up, things just kind of like progress naturally. Some things, marriages, relationships, et cetera, you just get to a logical stopping point. And we did. And then I ended up doing another podcast with Little Santiago called The Gator Pit. And I had adjusted from being Fat Man After Dark to now being Nick Gator. And Gator, because I'm a fine, proud graduate of the University of Florida.
Go Gator.
Go Gator. And looking for something else. And then we did that for a while, but we've been lucky in the DC area to have some really, really good local promotions that brought in really talented folks. And the Gator Pit podcast was involved as a sponsor and would want to support local independent wrestling. And I started pitching different ideas and doing this persona, this manager. And we went through a lot of fine tuning before we kind of got where we wanted. And then a former coworker of mine, it turned out that he had trained to be a wrestler, and that was kind of like everything kind of came together. Unfortunately, he ended up getting hurt in the first match that we were putting together. We had to call an audible, as happens in wrestling. But we developed this Coach Gator character. You know, he's Mickey from the Rocky movies. He's 200 and something years old. He's seen it all. He's done it all. He's wrestled Luthez. He's been idolized by Bruno Sammartino. He took on Jim Londis in Athens. He was at, you know, the original ancient Greek Olympiad. And it was a perfect fit as we got there and developed this character, because I had already known all these wrestling things. I could already talk about Gene Kaniski and Luthez and Pat O'Connor and Bruno and all this stuff well beyond my years in wrestling, just being that old soul.
Yeah.
Talking, you know. So I could reference stuff, you know, I could reference old things politically. Like I talk about Alton B. Parker. No one knows who the hell Alton B. Parker is. Do you know who Alton B. Parker is?
I actually don't, and you're stumping me, and I hate that I'm being stumped right now.
So Alton B. Parker was the Democratic candidate for president against Teddy Roosevelt and got demolished. And he was a very upstanding person. He was a judge in New York. He wasn't really a politician. And he was a very upstanding man. And people at the time, newspapers at the time, said whoever won, America would be fortunate. But it was Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, come on. Teddy Roosevelt, you know, incredible baby face for his time, war hero, you know, Bull Moose, and et cetera.
Yeah.
But Alton B. Parker got destroyed in that election. And it's just one of those things. And the reason it stood out to me is I have a very good friend.
Mr. Mackinson would punch me right now. My AP civics teacher would be absolutely disappointed in me right now.
Well, here's the thing is you really, there's no reason to know him because he is the only major party presidential candidate to never have a biography written of him. Everyone else that's a major party presidential candidate has had a book, a biography written about him. Alton B. Parker never has, and it was fascinating to me. So those little tidbits of history, but just, you know,
you're an old
soul. Wrestling.
Yeah,
I'm a very old soul. I can talk about old music like Johnny Mathis and Guy Lombardo, and you know, different people that I could throw into a promo.
And a fit being the 275-year-old wrestling manager character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I love, there's a group called Postmodern Jukebox that does like old swing jazz covers of modern pop songs. And so we used Gangster's Paradise as our first theme song. Then we used Dream On as the next theme song. So it's anachronistic.
Yeah.
And the whole Coach Gator character is anachronistic.
So you managed for a little while. And then you got involved a little bit more, and then things kind of fell off a little while, and now you're kind of at this crossroads where the promotion ceased to exist, and you decide to pick up the ball.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I've had a lot of support, and I've had a lot of great people. And one of the people that I am very lucky to work with, who is the chief brand officer for Primetime Pro Wrestling, is my friend Lolo. And Lolo is a very proud Washingtonian, and she has lots of great connections in D.C. She's very friendly and outgoing. She's great networking, communications, PR. She's the one that's gotten our three sponsors. She's the one that has had connections that would make it impossible to run in the District of Columbia and be a regular independent wrestling force in the district. It would be impossible without her. So as things kind of progressed, and not only was I at a crossroads, but the area was at a crossroads, because the DC wrestling fan base exists. It's here. It deserves great wrestling. It deserves regular independent wrestling. And there's other promotions. I mean, there are, there's Crab Wrestling based in Maryland. There's Flying V that has run a few shows and will run more shows. There's Fury Pro Wrestling. There are other promotions that are still in existence that still plan to run shows. But I really wanted to focus on the District of Columbia, a jurisdiction that was going through this adjustment because wrestling licenses were incredibly expensive. Everything was incredibly expensive. There was just too many barriers to entry. And Lolo and I have worked on that, but there were things that happened before me that I have been fortunate enough to be able to take advantage of, basically, and being able to move this forward.
Yeah, because no one's, like you said, no one's really run DC, even, you know, before. No one's run the district. I mean, was it a sense of personal responsibility? Was it a sense of challenge? What made you said, this has to be me, this has to be now? What was that sense of personal responsibility there?
Well, I think it's one of those questions, you know, if not me, who? Mm-hmm. And if not now, when? And that's what it just really came to. And I think I was in a position where I think folks trusted me, that I was someone that they could get behind. I think the wrestling fans wanted this. And it's a difficult situation in wanting to put something together while not looking like a scavenger picking the bones of, you know, other promotions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those things that I thought I felt comfortable moving into this role. And I thought, well, if it's a complete catastrophe and it doesn't even get off the ground, at least I try. And I would do my best. But I had a very good relationship with a lot of the people. And I still have a great relationship. There's no one in the area. We're all very friendly. You know, you see in other cities and other promotions where just the nature of the wrestling business is hyper-competitive. And, you know, there's a major city that has multiple wrestling companies. And there's, you know, some tension there because they're all kind of fighting for the same dollar. And they're all competing on a regular basis. You know, the District of Columbia, even though it has multiple, the DMV area has multiple wrestling promotions, were more friendly than anything. So I thought there was a lot of talent that's available. And geographically speaking, DC can pull, and as you look at the card for the first show, DC can pull from the Northeast, it can pull from the South,
oh, yeah,
it can pull from West Virginia, it can pull from a lot of places that people don't have to fly in from. You know, if you're looking at a six-hour drive, we can pull from so many people. And I think that really gives DC the opportunity and the advantage to run. And we have a very friendly and very helpful district government at this point that is committed to having independent wrestling, a professional wrestling, other than WWE's one or two stops a year. And they'll run a pay-per-view or a Raw. Like this year they ran the Raw before Mania, the go-home Raw for Mania in DC, and they'll be running, I think, the holiday tour they'll be doing, or the SummerSlam tour they'll be doing it. So, you know, running two or three times a year in the District of Columbia, DC deserved better, and I thought we could give them better. And with Lolo and with a great support team of, you know, countless people, it really does take a village to run a wrestling company, especially to get a wrestling company off the ground.
So my next question is, you kind of have to go, I mean, you've been in the business a little bit, more than a little bit, over the past, you know, couple of years or so, but you kind of have to tap back on your views again, being a fan, to pick the talent. Do you not? Do you have to kind of go back to being a fan again, or do you have to go back to being a person in the business again to pick the talent, because you're running a tournament, your first show?
I think it's one of those things where I had the concept, and I talked about this with Lolo and people who I trusted about, you know, what was going to be the idea. And my first thought process was to distinguish us, to put us out there, and to give fans the rightful belief that we're going to stick around, is we need to crown a champion. We have to have a title holder. We have to have a tournament. I love wrestling tournaments. And so I put together most of the talent in the tournament are people that I know well, that I've either worked with or I've been close to, who I've seen in person. There are some who are not as close to me, who I watched on YouTube or I saw them wrestle, or, you know, by word of mouth. And I wanted to have this 8-person tournament, and I wanted to have 8 people, men, women, non-binary, anyone. It's one promotion, one singles champion.
And talk to me about some of those 8 people. Talk to the people who are unfamiliar with who's in that tournament. Talk about some of those people in the tournament.
Sure. So we'll start with the Savage Gentleman, Victor Benjamin, and Lady Frost. They are
together. Oh, hold on. I'm having technical difficulties.
No, that's okay. You sound good.
Do I still sound good?
Yep.
Okay. So together they are known as Pretty Proper,
mm-hmm,
but They are individually in the tournament. They have both appeared on Raw. They have recently been accepted to the Ring of Honor Dojo, and they are very talented. They have very unique looks, very unique characters and styles, and there are a couple that I have worked extensively with and seen them extensively with, and I thought that was kind of a no-brainer to bring both of them in. Then we will go to Ariella Nix, who I managed. She was part of the Gator Pit. She holds titles, I think, in four different promotions in the Northeast. She's someone that I know very well, and I thought it made total sense to have her involved in this. The one person from the tournament who I don't know very well is Ashley America, but I've seen
her. Ashley who? You just cut out there for a second. Ashley who?
Ashley America.
Ashley America, okay.
And, I mean, how can you not have a tournament in the District of Columbia and not have someone named Ashley America?
This is factual.
Yeah. So that was kind of a must-have, basically. And then we'll talk about – I don't have to listen for me. Then we'll talk about Bro Keller. I think Bro is an incredibly exciting, young, good-looking guy, very athletic. I've seen him – several times. He's wrestled all over this area. I think he is someone who has been underutilized and needs this kind of an opportunity, deserves this kind of an opportunity. And I'm very happy to give him a shot at winning this tournament and being kind of the number one guy in this company. I think it's well deserved. Faye Jackson. I think Faye Jackson is great. I think Faye Jackson is one of the most charismatic people out there. And I know that the DC crowd is going to love her. And once again, it was someone that I thought had to be involved in this tournament. Someone that's had exposure, had experience, has traveled literally all over the world, was in Germany, will be in Germany again this year. Absolutely.
Oh, she's
perfect.
Fantastic. Yeah. She's absolutely great.
Faye is great.
You can never have fun. I mean, you can't not have fun watching her.
Yeah, 100%. I think all that leaves is the person who I have been the closest to and have the most history with, which is Isaiah Frazier, who I had managed him to a victory and winning the Crab heavyweight title, managed him to almost pulling off an enormous upset and beating Nick Aldis for the NWA World's Heavyweight title. Then we had a little bit of a falling out and things happened as they do in wrestling. But that was Earth 1, and you know we're on Earth 2
now.
Earth
2 now, yeah.
So he is in the tournament. He is still the Crab Wrestling Champion. He's held that title for coming up on a year now. And he's incredibly athletic. He is really good. He is making a name for himself in other promotions and other territories. And he's another person that, like Bro Keller, someone that deserves this opportunity, has worked very hard for this opportunity. And I'm very proud and happy to be able to give all of these folks an opportunity like this. So and that leaves the eighth spot.
Yeah, the eighth spot's open. Yeah.
The eighth spot is wide open. One of the other things I wanted to do was I wanted to add a little bit of intrigue. I wanted to add something a little different and have a battle royal for the eighth spot. So we currently have 14 people, 13 plus Mikey Banker if he gets his blood work in and gets his DC license. But we have 14 people if Mikey's in. There probably will be at least two or three more. No more than 20, but probably two or three more, so we'll have somewhere between 14 and 17 participants. And the winner will get Bro Keller in the first round. And anyone, I mean, you're talking about veterans like Francis Kip Stevens, who is a longtime veteran in New York and New Jersey. You have young guys like O'Shea Edwards, another guy who has done all these things and is on the precipice of greatness.
Oh, he was on this podcast last week. He's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone else who really deserves the kind of opportunity that this can offer them. So it's going to be fantastic. No one knows who's winning that battle royal. No one knows who's getting that eighth spot. And someone could come in relatively unknown to folks in the DC area, win that battle royal and go all the way to the top and be wearing the Primetime Pro Wrestling title by the end of the night.
Well, O'Shea would be my pick. I love him to death.
O'Shea is great, but mm-hmm. anyone in the battle royal has the most difficult task ahead of
them. It's very true.
They have to get through 15 other people and then have three more matches in order to win. Definitely not impossible, but it's going to be quite an uphill battle.
So, is it going to be women versus women, and then the final will be intergender?
The first round will be men versus men and women versus women. The semifinals will both be intergender, and then the finals will be whatever the finals are, depending on the results of the semifinals.
Interesting.
So the way the brackets are going to work is that on one side of the bracket, the winner of the Battle Royal will face Bro Keller, and the winner of that match will face the winner of Ariella Nix and Faye Jackson in one semifinal. And then the other side, you have Isaiah Frazier and Savage Gentleman Victor Benjamin, and the winner of that will take on the winner of Lady Frost and Ashley America.
So Lady Frost could face Victor Benjamin in the second round.
That is possible.
Fascinating.
That is, if the tournament lines up like that, pretty proper could explode in the semifinals.
Fascinating. The mega powers explode.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting, interesting. So you're taking this risk. You have this tournament lined up. Are you a little bit terrified?
Oh, I am terrified. I'm paranoid. I'm all of the above. I'm very lucky to have a pretty good support system of folks who have been wrestling promoters, who are wrestling promoters, folks in the business, people who can give me some perspective, people who I can bounce ideas off of that I trust, and people that can kind of talk me off of that ledge when all that happens. Come on down, Sandy. Sandy, my landlady's coming to get her laundry, everybody. I'm on a podcast right now. So that's one of those things that it's a brotherhood, and I know that kind of gets thrown out a lot, but you and I both know we have made some of the closest friends we have in this universe because of pro wrestling.
Oh, completely. And that's the thing. You have so many people rooting for you, is the point I was going to get to you. Like, you have so many people who, even if we're not necessarily going to necessarily physically be there, who want you to succeed and have your back and like want you and really want you to do well.
And it's very much appreciated, and everything has gone very well. We have a lot of people that know what they're doing. We have a venue, the DC Brow Brewery, that's a proud sponsor that has been incredibly supportive. We have sound and video folks. We have a ring announcer who sent in a video, sent in an audition tape because we had kind of an all call. And he was selected to be our ring announcer based on that. And he was everything that I was looking for in a ring announcer. And Lolo, my number two, has to agree on those major things. And she agreed 100%. And it was a go. So we have a brand new ring announcer who has never worked for a wrestling company in the past. We're going to have some homegrown DC talent at this show. And it's going to be a happening, as Gorilla Monsoon used to say.
What's the stuff that sneaks up on you that people wouldn't realize? Is it the concessions? Is it the stuff like the ring announcer? Is it the stuff like the renting the ring? What is the stuff that someone who's never promoted would never think about is the real thing that kind of gets you?
The bond and insurance requirements,
really,
which are very expensive. So, and it's not something you're going to necessarily think of. All the requirements of the DC Combat Sports Commission, those are the things that are the most important that you're not even going to think about. And I made a list. But when all this started, if you have to put on a wrestling show, what do you need? And it was basically like equipment, and then the other side was personnel. So you know you need a ring. You know you need a sound system. You know you need certain things. And then on the personnel side, you know you need a ring announcer. You know you need wrestlers. If you're going to video it, you need video production folks. If you're going to have a commentator, you need a commentator. You need to have someone running the front of the house, et cetera. And then you have to look at the state or, in our case, the federal district requirements, which include a bond, which include insurance, which include the permit application, the promoter application. Getting all of your wrestlers licensed, which is the process that we're going through right now. It's something that is expensive, and you know, no one or very few people are getting incredibly wealthy being independent wrestling promoters. And DC is expensive. I mean, We are very lucky to have a really great deal with DC Brow as a sponsor as our venue, but the insurance is expensive. All these other things are expensive. Even as a wrestler, and this is very unique to DC, the stress of getting folks to get their license, I have been very lucky that so many folks have been so supportive and wanted to be a part of this and have gone through this process. We're also very lucky that the Combat Sports Commission, they lowered the price of a wrestling license from $100-something to $25. But in D.C., you need to have blood work and physical and some other medical requirements that you don't need in Virginia. In Virginia, it's $40 and you're done. In D.C., there are some requirements that aren't available elsewhere, and we've had to work through with the commission, and they've been very good, but we really are dragging them into the 21st century because they deal with WWE, and WWE has the resources to deal with all of this without blinking an eye.
So you're really the first of your kind to do this.
Yes, and there have been people who have worked on this in the past. There are a lot of people who have put in a lot of time and effort, and unfortunately, those endeavors didn't come through, and I would not be able to do this without them. I really am, you know, standing on the shoulders of lots of other people who have wanted to do this, who have tried to do this, who have fought to do this, and for one reason or another, it didn't come through. So this is it's absolutely a group effort, and
you're breaking ground here.
We are breaking ground. We are breaking new ground. We are really making history. And on May 26th at the DC Brow Brewery, we are going to make history. We are going to crown a primetime pro wrestling champion. We're going to hold the first independent wrestling show in the district, maybe ever. And I would love for everybody out there to buy their tickets, but we are sold out. So
that's even better.
You're going to have to wait, and you're going to have to see the show on independentwrestling.tv when it is up. I'm hoping that we can get it up on the website within a couple of weeks from the event. So probably, you know, early to mid-June, I'm hoping to have the show up on the independentwrestling.tv. We have no plans to live stream at least the first couple of shows. If they come in and want to do the live stream of the show, that would be great. If we have other opportunities, that's great. But we wanted to really make sure that the local fans were taken care of. But of course, we want to have as big an audience as possible, and the wrestlers deserve to have that kind of platform to be able to tell their story.
Well, I was gonna get to plugs, but shit, I mean, you're already sold out.
that's what we're doing. Lolo and I will be on the Big Gold Belt Wrestling Podcast next week, and it's really going to be talking about, you know, the stuff. We don't really hype anything right now.
Do you have a second incredible show coming up? That's my next question. I mean, you're already looking ahead to show number two.
I mean, as I've said in the tweets, you know, we may run another show, but we're definitely running another show.
Yeah.
So all I can say is that there will be an after party at DC9 following the show, and there might be some opportunity to learn some more, and there might be an announcement at the show. There will be an announcement at the show regarding, you know, how we move forward.
Fantastic. And my hope is that I can hopefully make it up there, maybe even with Ava, who even knows, if you do have another show, or two or three or five or 10 or 20, I want to make it up there because I love you. You're wonderful. I'm really rooting for this endeavor. I think you're doing a wonderful thing here. You're breaking ground, and I can't root for this endeavor highly enough. Gator, you're a great man, and you're doing a great thing here, my friend.
I appreciate that, and as I've told you, you have a front row comp anytime you can come here, if only to make up for your WrestleMania issues. So, assuming we run another show, which we're probably going to run another show, assuming there are other shows to be run, I would suggest coordinating with some of the mutual friends we have the road who I know want to make the trip. And like I said, I mean, $25 in a physical and your daughter can be licensed to go.
She's never going to wrestle ever, ever, ever.
Or you can be licensed to go.
I don't want to bump my insulin pump. Are you kidding me?
Hey, we'll put you in there with somebody that works safe. Don't worry. We'll put you in there that works light. I'm not going to put you in there versus, Nick Gage or anybody like that. We'll have some.
I've actually heard he works pretty light. I've heard he's a very safe worker.
Might be a matter of opinion. David Arquette may feel differently. Personally, I hate to break kayfabe here and say this, but honestly, I've been around Nick Gage a little bit at shows, and he is genuinely one of the nicest people that I've talked to.
That's what I've heard too. Yeah, he's actually a quality human being. Nick Gage, as we learned at Scenic City, is for the children. He was the Pied Piper at Scenic City with all the little kids following him around. It was the funniest thing on the planet.
That was really incredible.
It was unbelievable. Was really
cool. And by the way, if I don't see you at an upcoming PTPW show, I do plan, Sean Neutron and I are planning on coming to SCI in August.
Oh, good. Wonderful. Glad to hear. Greatest weekend of the year. We are going to have a blast.
Yeah. I got to just talk to Dylan about getting booked. So other than that, we'll be there.
Fantastic. Well, Gator, I will see you at some point this summer, if not sooner rather than later. I appreciate it, my friend. You're a great man. You're running a great promotion. You're already sold out of your first show, so we have nothing to plug. But plug the Twitter at the very least, and talk a little bit about the promotion, where people can see it on Independent Wrestling TV.
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at the Mr. Gator, and Mr. is spelled out. You can follow Primetime Pro Wrestling on Twitter at PrimetimePW, all one word. You can like us on Facebook at Primetime Pro Wrestling. And we will be available on independentwrestling.tv a few weeks following the May 26th event. But May 26th, DC Brewery, Grapital City, making history, running the first independent wrestling show in the District of Columbia, maybe ever. And I appreciate the opportunity to come on the show and talk about my fandom and my relationship with the world of professional wrestling. And, I'm very much looking forward to us being able to properly hang out next time we are together.
I'm sure we'll have you on again to talk a little bit more about your live pay-per-view experiences. But I just want to catch you at this unique time, just having you on here. So it's been an absolute pleasure, my friend.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Later, brother. Bye.
Talk to you later.
Save every penny like Inspector Gadget reruns. My name is Donald Glover. Talented motherfucker. Child, this is my cover to hide this shit from my mother. She can't know how I'm living. I'm drinking and fucking women. And she is Jehovah Witness. And don't believe in all this shit. But I gotta handle business. Kick it like soccer. Upper class Kit Kat. Break them off proper. I am just a rapper. Sick boy is my click, man. You are not a sick boy. You are just a sick man. Take some Dimetap. Yeah, these hoes a dime a tap. Lest you get caught by them bitches, better keep your penis wrapped. Then you are just a rapper. The sky is the limit. Don't put nothing on the game, just put something back in it.
I get it, until you just can't get no more.